This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. Today's program is a discussion of residential care for the elderly in Hawaii.
I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us today in studio, Keith Ridley, who heads the Department of Health's Office of Healthcare Assurance. It handles all licensing for healthcare facilities and groups across the state. This includes on-site state licensing, surveys and inspections, and Medicare certification. It's a big job overseeing some 1,700 licensed facilities.
Gwinnette Gaylord, a care home operator and president of the Alliance of Residential Care Administrators, had agreed to participate in today's program but canceled earlier this morning, emailing that we were expecting HB 1911 to pass yesterday, but it got deferred to today. I was told not to talk to anyone about this bill until it is done. I am speculating that these unlicensed homes have friends in the right places that are trying to kill this bill.
And today we're focusing on a particular situation with Kapuna Care, an issue that affects our most frail population in Hawaii. And in the final days of this legislative session, lawmakers are considering this bill that would regulate unlicensed care homes. One lawmaker called it the most important consumer protection bill this session. We're asking listeners to call in to share their experiences or to ask questions at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689. So Keith Ridley, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Set the stage for us. This bill could be decided today.
Well, that's the expectation. It is being heard this afternoon at the legislature.
And so tell us, what would it do specifically?
The bill would essentially make clear in the statute that the Department of Health, and particularly our office, the Office of Healthcare Assurance, has the authority to conduct an investigation of homes that are alleged to be operating without a license. This would enable us to go into the home to conduct the investigation to determine whether, in fact, that home is in violation of the law or perhaps isn't in violation of the law. The point about being able to get into the home is one that we're very concerned about. We want to make sure that if care is being provided and that care should be within the under the umbrella of a license, that the operator is, in fact, operating pursuant to the law.
So tell us about this problem. I mean, you folks have been investigating this. You know, it's not anything new, but there are more complaints?
Well, we've been conducting inspections of residential care homes for many years, and this licensing program has been in place for many years. And from time to time, we found homes that have been unlicensed, sometimes the operator doesn't realize that there is a license, and we've had to instruct them on what the requirements are, and they've either complied by applying for a license or not. But what we have noticed over recent years is a small but an increasing number of complaints that we've been receiving on homes that may be operating without a license. So this increasing number is what concerns us and is what prompted us, really, to work with the legislators on this bill so that we could make clear our authority to go in and conduct these investigations.
And you have actually been blocked from entering a home?
Sure. There have been times when operators or homeowners have said, essentially, this is a private property. You have no authority to be here and get off my property. And we have. We are not a police authority. We are a regulatory authority. And if someone doesn't want us on their private property, then we comply. We turn around and leave. But we just wanted to make clear in the statute that we do have the authority to conduct those investigations.
Okay. And I believe, there was a hearing earlier this session about this very issue, and I know you were there in attendance, and I believe we have a clip from Representative John Mizuno about this bill and this issue.
The genesis of the bill is consumer protection to stop unlicensed care homes. We've heard the stories, we've got verifications. Even without the bill, we recently had an unlicensed care home that was fined $325,000. This was a former licensed care home. And we've seen the great exodus of a number of licensed care homes saying, why pay for liability insurance to be licensed? Let's get as many many people as we can get. And so even without the global force, we see this kind of really bad situation occurring, and actually proliferation of illegal care homes throughout the state.
If you could react to that, I mean, this large fine, explain that situation.
Well, I can't talk about the fine or the case, because that is still an ongoing case, so I can't talk about that as well. But Representative Mizuno has been terrific. He is very much in favor of this bill. We've met with him several times, and he's a strong advocate for what we're trying to accomplish. And so he's been very helpful with us. We started meeting with him more than a year ago. So this has really been quite a work in progress. And he has been extremely helpful in helping shepherd this bill through the House when it was introduced in the House, and then very much involved when it crossed over to the Senate chambers and went through the Senate side as well.
Is the concern then that what folks just don't want to go through the hoops, and they're just then saying, okay, I don't want to be licensed anymore, I'll go and do this other thing on the side?
Well, it's unclear why they do that. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, there have been the operator or two in the past who claims that they were unaware of the licensing requirement. And when we've gone to those homes, again, to conduct these complaint investigations, we've made that person aware, and they've complied one way or the other by either applying for a license or by ceasing to provide that care in their home. And so there have been other operators, however, who we've gone in and attempted to conduct a complaint investigation, and they've refused us access. So we don't even know whether that home was in fact operating without a license or not. We weren't able to obtain facts, and as a result, we weren't able to apply the law. So it's a little unclear about that, but we do feel that because of the need, as Representative Mizuno said in your clip, that this is a consumer protection issue. It is. It's a major consumer protection issue, and it's a health issue, and it's a freedom issue as well, both for patients as well as for homeowners and operators.
It would surprise some people, Keith, to know that they had the right to refuse you access, and that they're essentially there isn't anything you can do about it at that point, right?
Well, you know, again, it's private property, and we're not law enforcement. We don't have any evidence of any harm being conducted in most cases. Oftentimes, the complaints will come to us, sometimes by phone call, sometimes by anonymous letter, you know, noting that there are there's a lot of activity going on in a home, perhaps in the neighborhood, and asking us whether, in fact, that home is a licensed care home. And when we check and we discover that it's not a licensed care home, then we go to conduct an investigation. But we don't have any other evidence other than somebody saying, oh, there's a lot of traffic, a lot of foot traffic, automobile traffic, et cetera. Maybe the occasional ambulance coming in and out, perhaps. But we don't have any evidence that someone is in danger, whether actually or imminently. So we're not law enforcement to go in. We're not the Adult Protective Services, who has actually probably to some degree greater authority than we do. But we do want to go in and collect the facts and apply the law if necessary.
You just want to get in the front door, right?
That's correct.
To check out
That's
the complaint.
Correct. And most have been very helpful. Most have been, you know, very willing to allow us to investigate. But there have been in recent years a small but growing number of homes and complaints on unlicensed activity. And again, a small but growing number of those who have refused us to onto their property to conduct the investigation. So that raises a concern for us and is what led us to this bill.
A concern was expressed in a hearing about the bill by Wynette Gaylord, president of the Alliance of Residential Care Administrators.
We have seen an exodus of many licensed care homes, foster homes, that have left the system because they don't want to be regulated. We feel that, of course, it's important to be regulated so that we have the oversight of the Department of Health to keep our kupuna and our disabled safe. And that's simple. That's all we're looking for, is for the safety and well-being of these people.
Is that accurate, that there's an exodus of licensed care homes?
Well, over many years, there have been a large number of homes that have left. And most of them have left because the care operator is aging him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're getting out of the business. They're retiring. They have no one to take over the care home operation in their home. So we find that the majority are those situations. Beyond that, as far as tracking data on someone leaving in order to set up an unlicensed home, we don't have any direct information about that specifically. We have seen that there have been at least a couple of situations where unlicensed operators were in fact previously licensed, so they do know what the requirements are, why they chose to become not unlicensed and then open up a home unlicensed is a concern to us, but the fact is you have to be licensed. Whatever your reason is, you have to be licensed.
Is there a penalty if they lie to you when your inspectors go to the door and they just lie about it? I mean, is there any kind of a fine or anything attached to that?
That's a great idea. No, there really isn't. Again, it's collecting the facts. What is it that they're doing, and then applying the law? As I mentioned, there have been times when we've discovered that care is being provided in the home, but it's to a relative. Well, if you're related, you don't have to be licensed. There are really four criteria that requires licensure: that someone requires care, they're living with someone not related to them in their home, and they're paying a fee. So once you have all of those things combined, licensure is required for that home and the care home operator. Whether the care home operator is actually providing that care is immaterial. The person requires care, needs care, and is receiving the care either from the operator or from some outside source. They're living with typically a family or someone who is in the home on a 24-hour basis who is not related to them, and they're paying a fee. So if someone is related, if I bring my auntie into my home, and whether she is paying a fee or not, the fact is we're related, I'm not required to be licensed.
Do they have to provide documentation to show that person is related?
That would be part of the fact gathering that would take place.
The reason why I asked that is there was another bill before the lawmakers this session about lying to city inspectors as part of this whole outgrowth of the monster home controversy. And I know there was some concern by lawmakers that, well, okay, by making it a law that you can't lie to city inspectors, does that make it okay to lie to state inspectors? So that was why I brought that up. But I know in doing some of these stories about the monster homes last year, we came across one in Palolo where the home had 16 bedrooms or something like that, and it was being marketed as a long-term care home, point blank, that it was built. You know, you had lots of bedrooms. You had one large room with multiple beds. It raised some eyebrows on the city council level. I think Ann Kobayashi was concerned about that. And same with the fire department. They're like, no, there are certain rules and regulations when it comes to care of the elderly, you know, whether you have to have sprinklers or proper access. So, you know, that was why I brought that up.
There are a number of very large homes. There are the adult residential care home regulations really identify two kinds or two types of homes. One is a type one home, which is five beds and fewer. A type two home has six beds or more without an upper limit. So these could be large homes. Lunalilo Home in Hawaii Kai is an arch. It's an expanded arch.
Adult residential care home.
And so there are a number of homes that are of that kind of size. But as you pointed out, it's imperative that they, and a part of the requirement of the licensing, is that they follow all county requirements and code. So if there's a fire code or building code, land use code, et cetera, that they have to follow, then we get confirmation from this from the county that they are, in fact, in compliance with that as part of the licensing application.
Keith and Catherine, let me just interject real briefly. We're asking our listeners to call in. The issue at hand is Kupuna Care. The numbers to reach us are 808-941-3689 on Oahu, 1-877-941-3689 from Neighbor Islands or anywhere else. Our in-studio guest is Keith Ridley, whose voice you just heard, head of the Department of Health's Office of Healthcare Assurance. And we do very much want listeners to weigh in. This is obviously an issue that affects a great many of us.
We're being told, too, that there's this new model, and I think they're calling it aging in place. If you can share with our listeners what that's all about.
Well, it's a little unclear to us what it's all about. We're being told by some of the advocates of these aging in place homes what their intent is. And we've had some discussions with them. Essentially, what they're trying to say is that people have the right to live together. And that's true. And again, you know, when it comes to a situation of gathering the facts to determine whether a home does in fact need to be licensed, that would be part of what we were gathering. Some aging-in-place advocates say, again, people have the right to live together. If they're living with a family, the family is not providing care. And so that's one of the criteria, perhaps, that they think excludes them from being licensed.
Right. They just say, oh, I'm just renting to this person.
Right. I'm just renting this person. I'm renting out rooms to this person in my home, but I'm not providing care. Well, the law doesn't say that. The law doesn't say that you have to be the one providing care. The law says that the persons who are living in that home require care, whether that care is coming from the landlord or whether it's coming from outside.
There was a comment on the public hearing on the bill under consideration today from Wynette Gaylord, who is a care home operator, president of the Alliance of Residential Care Administrators.
These so-called aging-in-place homes say that they keep people until they die because they want to age in place. Basically, once the person runs out of money, they have to call a case manager for placement into a foster home that only takes Medicaid clients.
When they run out of money, they become Medicaid.
Correct.
Patients.
Is that accurate, Keith?
Very likely. You know, when people do run out of money, when they exhaust all their resources based on state law at some period of time, they may qualify for coverage by Medicaid. I'm not an expert on the Medicaid coverage, but that can happen whether the home is licensed or not licensed. You could be in a licensed home paying a private fee and you run out of money, and the care home operator then has to reach some agreement with their client on how payment would continue. If there's no payment, you know, you can't blame someone from a business standpoint of trying to figure out some way around that or a way of either gaining payment somehow. And if that means that they go on to Medicaid and Medicaid is able to pay for those services, then fine. One of the things that Waynette mentioned also is that people want to age in place. You know, they're living together, they want to age in place until they die. Well, at some point they're going to need care. Even if they're living together and the care that they're receiving is minimal, as they're aging, they're going to need more and more and more care.
Sure.
Perhaps at some point, nursing level of care. So the care becomes more involved, could become more complex, and who is ensuring that that person is getting the appropriate care? The other thing that we have a concern about is that the home itself is an environment of care. The home, under the regulations, has to have so much square footage per person so that we don't have people who are, you know, stuck in a closet under the staircase as their bedroom, or that you don't have three, four, or more people jammed into a small bedroom, that there's adequate lighting, ventilation, that food storage and food handling and meals are prepared properly. And so food storage as a part of the physical plant, as part of the structure, becomes something that we will conduct an inspection on as well. So the home is an environment of care. So people who say, well, you know, there's just all of us living together, we don't need to be licensed, possibly true. If the landlord is specifically targeting or predominantly targeting people who need care, then our concern is whether that landlord is in fact maintaining the home in the way that would be conducive to the care.
I know on the city level they have rules about, you know, you can have so many unrelated roomers or dormers. I don't know what term they use in addition to your family. You know, so, I mean, is that just another way of kind of getting around these things?
Well, not really. I'm sure people are very creative and they'll try a variety of things. And what we need to do is we need to be able to conduct these investigations and gather the facts. And once we gather the facts, then we can apply the law. And in some cases, I'm sure licensure would not be required. And in other cases, as we suspect, probably most cases, licensure would be required.
But you're currently constrained from gathering the facts, as I understand it.
Well, we've been prevented in some cases from entering the property, from talking to any of the clients or patients that are there to determine those facts. Mm-hmm. And that's been part of the constraint. So we wanted to make very clear through this bill that the Department of Health does have the authority to go in and conduct these investigations. Whether the bill passes or not, and we certainly are very optimistic that it will pass, whether it passes or not, we certainly do have the authority that if we are constrained from, on a very civil level, entering the home to conduct these investigations, we're prepared to go to court and handle it in that way. That makes it more protracted.
As a civil case,
yes,
which takes longer, right?
It'll take longer. If there is any chance that someone may be in a vulnerable situation and may be more susceptible to harm, then it makes it longer for us to be able to go in and to determine that.
Right, because the concern is for the patient, for the elderly person that might be in one of these homes that may be neglected. You know, and maybe you don't know that until, you know, unfortunately there's a death and maybe an investigation if it rises to that level. But, I mean, that's the main concern, right? It's the safety of the person.
It's the safety of the person not only from a physical standpoint, but, you know, there are financial things as well, if someone being taken care of financially. Now, we don't regulate in terms of how much the fee is for these homes, but we do highly encourage that the client and the operator have a contract. What are the services that are expected? You know, meals, bedroom. Are you going to be in a private room or are you going to be in a semi-private room? What kinds of excursions might there be? What kind of allowance is there for visitors?
Yeah.
What time of day, et cetera? Freedom of movement, you know, those sorts of things. So, you know, we highly encourage people to have a written contract with the care home operator to spell this out very clearly, and including what fees are owed and what access, if any, the care home operator may have to some cash funds that the client has.
We're talking to Keith Ridley, who is the head of the Department of Health's Office of Healthcare Assurance. And Keith, earlier we had that reference to when or if the client runs out of money, they have to be taken somewhere else. Is that made clear upon entry to a care facility?
Again, that would be something that would be in the contract between the two parties.
But, I mean, is that a standard provision, do you know?
No, I'm not aware.
Yeah.
It may be, but I'm not aware.
It's certainly something people want to know about, right?
Sure, absolutely.
You know, what happens to me when I run out of money? And we're inviting our listeners to call in. Let me just give those phone numbers real quick. 941-3689. 1-877-941-3689. The legislature is considering later this afternoon a bill to regulate long-term care facilities for the elderly. And we suspect there are a great many people out there listening who are affected by this. So do call us, 941-3689, if you're on Oahu. our 1-877-941-3689. And, you know, let's round out this story with some personal experiences. Yeah.
And Keith, we've heard stories about, oh, that there are facilities or homes where they're caring for maybe up to, I don't know, 20 people. Have you come across situations like that? Or, I mean, are these is this just legend? Or are there actual cases where you've had a number of folks in these unregulated homes?
Well, we haven't seen that those kind of numbers in unlicensed homes, those that we've been able to get in and conduct any investigations on. Typically, the ones that we have been allowed in and obtained information on is 2, 3, 4. Sometimes it's just one. And as I mentioned earlier, we do have licensed homes who have those many clients in those homes. But we haven't seen that in the unlicensed home arena yet.
I know we had a situation in Kaimuki where I think folks were complaining because they said, oh, these operators actually bought two homes and then were using like the space between them as a courtyard, and it was a way to get around, you know, getting a variance and having a hearing and having the neighbors weigh in on, you know, is this appropriate use in this residential area because of all the comings and goings. You know, so I don't know if you've had any situations like that where you've had to investigate.
I don't think we've seen anything of that specific nature. We know that there are licensed operators who do have multiple homes. Some of those homes are next door to each other. Some are on properties that are condominium properties where there may be several homes around a cul-de-sac, say, for example. And they could use the space in between those homes pretty much whatever they would want to do with them, whether as a gathering area for residents from the various homes or for whatever other purpose. Fact would remain that those homes are licensed. The home has to be licensed. The home will meet, by state law, will have to meet all county requirements for building code, land use, et cetera. And those things are part of the application process that we ensure that an applicant has before they're licensed.
We have a caller on line one. Vicki from Honolulu?
Yes.
Hi, Vicki.
Hello.
Thanks for calling in. What has been your experience?
Oh, my experience is my loved one just passed, and I'm still trying to find my equilibrium. But, you know, like many people, local people, we want the best, and we still work for our care. As far as being a qualified caregiver, it's kind of hard when you work and you hurt your back by lifting, and you know you want to spend as much time as possible with your parent who's aged. And the bottom line is I've experienced the private homes, and I interviewed quite a few, and I you know visited quite a few, and I chose a couple, and just not adequate food, not adequate lighting, not adequate supervision. So my contribution to this conversation is quite minimal, but I have had a very good experience with the care home facility that is regulated by the state, more you know, qualified people, more qualified food, not qualified, but a better food, and just, you know, just the private homes, as I'm saying, are not suitable for the best care. It's just that they want so much money and it's not regulated properly as far as the food, enough light, just, you know, things like that.
Well, Vicki, let me just keep you on the line for a second. You looked at several facilities, and you're saying you saw some that you felt were really inadequate?
It's not that I didn't look at that many facilities, but I went to private homes to, you know, to see what kind of service they would provide. and my loved one stayed in two places, and they both were inadequate.
In what way? As you said, food, lighting?
Food, supervision, just, you know, stimulation, just supplies. Like, for example, I would have to bring napkins because my loved one didn't have the kind of napkins just to eat, just basic things like Kleenex or napkins. I even brought like a ramp so she wouldn't fall, you know, and, you know, for toileting to put the arms up instead of hitting, falling unnecessarily, you know, things like that.
Sure.
And, yeah, well, and then we'll report it. Nothing's done for the lighting, for the ramp, for the, you know, things like that. So to me, it's not supervised adequately. The private homes are not supervised adequately.
Vicki, yes. One of the terms that you used was stimulation, and we do hear sometimes that the elderly get more or less parked without, you know, activities and just, you know, a variance in what they see and are able to be around every day. Is that what you were referring to?
Yeah. So the facilities, though, they do have regular activities, daily and weekly activities. That's excellent for them. To be, you know, participating and stimulated by these activities like bingo games and things like that at a private place. And nobody does anything. That's what my experience has been, you know? So, yeah.
Vicki, thanks very much for sharing your personal story with us. Appreciate it.
If I could ask, Keith, I mean, I know our partners at Civil Beat have done a number of stories about inspection reports and trying to get them online. And I know when I had an experience and I was looking at care facilities for my in-laws on the mainland, and this was, you know, more than 10 years ago, that was a valuable service for me. I mean, I was able to look to see the complaints and see how they were resolved. And so I was really kind of surprised to think that, oh, gosh, we don't have that here. Where, you know, it'd be a tool to really help people gauge the quality of care at one facility versus another that is licensed.
Well, the inspection reports for licensure are, in fact, on our website, yeah, and this was something that the legislature required of us beginning about 3 years mm-hmm. or so ago. And so we have been putting those inspection reports on our Department of Health website. Those inspection reports are not only for on adult residential care homes, but also on skilled nursing facilities and other kinds of facilities. And those are on our website. They do detail what was found, what kinds of issues there were, how those were not in compliance with the licensing regulation. And those reports also include responses from those care home operators on how those deficiencies were to be corrected. We do follow up to make sure that, in fact, those deficiencies are corrected. But in terms of the inspection reports, those are online, and people can go free of charge, go onto the department website and look that up.
I guess I was surprised to think that we hadn't done this sooner, you know, given that the technology was there. And I think staffing was a concern, I think, that the department had when this initially came up.
There are a number of concerns that we had back at that time. And to some degree, we still have some of those concerns. One was staffing, although the legislature has been very supportive and has provided us with resources. The other is that we have a very antiquated way of conducting inspections and of documenting those inspections. And so we're in the process of embarking on creating a more automated inspection process and implementing a management information system that will provide us with greater management controls and better regulatory controls over the documentation. That would include, for example, the ability for us to better do the inspection through an electronic means, using a tablet or a laptop. And we've begun doing that over the last 2 to 3 years. And when we get a document that's now digital, we can send it. We haven't started doing this yet, but we can send it to the care home operator in a digital format. They can respond to it by entering their corrective action on that. Once it comes back to us, we either accept or decline that plan of correction, as we call it, and we'll post all that information online. So once we have it in a digital format from the beginning, then we can more quickly upload it onto our website. Previously, everything was very manual. When I came on board, staff were going out with a pad of paper and you know, the copy of their regulations and conducting inspections. and coming back and then typing it onto their desktop computers into a report, which was still on paper at that
point. Right, just very cumbersome.
Pretty archaic.
Very cumbersome, yeah. Very archaic. So we're in the process of having to change all of that, and so we're very excited to have that accomplished. That's probably a good couple of years, but what we have been doing is those paper reports that we've been issuing and getting responses on from care home operators, we've scanned them into our system, and we've uploaded it that way. So it takes a bit more effort to do that, but as you indicated, it's very important to the public to have that.
How many staff have you got to conduct these inspections?
Well, our office, the Office of Healthcare Assurance, has a significant number of facilities to license. So when it comes to the adult residential care homes, mm-hmm. those in particular, and the expanded adult residential care homes, which is kind of under the same regulatory umbrella, mm-hmm. We have about eight staff that conduct those inspections, and they are
statewide,
mm-hmm. Mostly nurses. We do have a couple of other non-nurses that are involved in that process as well. But our Office of Healthcare Assurance really has a number of more inspectors than that, but they are really dedicated to other care facilities, skilled nursing facilities, more of the institutional facilities as well.
We always hear about the specific issues to an island state, and as you say, eight people statewide. You've got a few islands to take care of.
And we are mostly centralized. We are here.
Sure.
We do have one position that, by her request, is situated on one of the neighbor islands, and we are more than happy to accommodate that person and have her still as one of the resources for us.
I'm just curious, because in an urban area, an urban setting, we generally know our neighbors, and so, if you see something unusual, you ask questions, you find out, you flag situations if you think something illegal is happening, whether it's a care home or something else. But on the neighbor islands, maybe where it's more rural, how are we doing in that area? I just would think that if somebody's out in the boondocks and nobody's watching, you just worry about the care that someone might be getting in a home.
Well, we do conduct inspections every year for renewal of license. And we are also required by law to conduct at least one visit. It's different from a licensing inspection. It may encompass just stopping by, seeing how the patient is doing.
It's unannounced.
And it is unannounced. And so we do have that ability. So we're in homes at least twice a year, either on the license renewal or for the unannounced visit.
That's a lot of homes for eight people over the course of a year.
That is a lot. We do have, again, I mentioned the one person on the neighbor island, and we do travel. So traveling also takes a bit of a toll as well. These are, for the most part, on the neighbor islands, relatively rural areas. And so we try to use the best of our time. If one of our inspectors is going to be on a neighbor island, maybe he'll try to get in a couple of homes if possible to take advantage of being there. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, especially on the more spread out areas of the Big Island, for example, where it takes longer to get to a home, it may just be a full day just on one home.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about long-term care, and if you'd like to join the discussion or have a question, call us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. Again, you can also reach us online on social media. Now, Keith, I recall a time when I was out looking at facilities for care for my father, and I looked at, arch facilities and, private care homes and then long-term care facilities as well. So he was in all three, and in one case for the care home, I thought he got actually better care in that care home than a regulated, the arch facility. So it really, you have to really go out there and see what's available in the community.
Sure. Our concern, of course, is protection of the public. We want to make sure that they're not being taken advantage of. that the care being provided to them is the kind of care that is required by law, required based on their medical needs as well, and that they're being adequately cared for. We don't have those kinds of assurances in unlicensed homes, although it could very well be that the care being provided by those unlicensed homes could be very good, but there isn't an assurance on behalf of the public that that's the case without them being licensed, without some objective party going in and conducting a review to determine, in fact, if that's the case.
Right, and if your loved one is in one of these homes, you should be able to visit whenever you like.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, Keith, we're talking to Keith Ridley, he's the head of the Department of Health's Office of Healthcare Assurance. To someone like the situation Catherine just described that she was in, or to anyone who's looking for long-term care for an elderly relative or loved one, what kind of things would you recommend that they look for? You know, what kind of criteria would you suggest that they kind of be mindful of?
Well, the first thing anyone should do is ask if they're licensed. Do you have a license? Let me see your license. Let me see if you're licensed. Let me see your last inspection report, notwithstanding that it's available online. Ask them to show you their inspection report. If they're not licensed, my recommendation would be to look for a licensed home and to let us know if, in fact, someone is putting themselves out as someone willing to provide care in an unlicensed capacity. You know, we'd like to know those things.
Can we just emailing your office or calling you or what, you know, you obviously need to get input from the public to do
right.
your job, right?
Right, right. They could call our number. We are in the process, as I mentioned, of developing a more automated way of doing things, of putting complaint forms online where you'd be able to submit complaints electronically online. So that's something that we're trying to get up and running, you know, fairly quickly. But otherwise, they can call our office here on Oahu, 808-692-7227, 808-692-7227, and we'll make sure they get to the right party.
We'll make sure we put that on our website after the show. There's a caller from Kaneohe, Woody?
Yes.
Yes, Woody, what's on your mind?
Well, I have what I think is a unique situation, but maybe not. We have a large house. It's actually a five-bedroom house. And it's just a rental. We have, you know, myself and I have roommates. Well, a few months ago, one of my roommates went to the beach and kicked off her slippers and turned around and tripped over them and fell down and broke her hip. Now she is, after rehab, she's back with us again. But she does have caregivers now. So does that make my place a care home? I'm not really looking to run a care home.
She's not related to you, right?
No. Just a friend, roommate. Been here for a couple of years.
I'd need a lot more information before I could make a judgment, and it certainly wouldn't be wise of me or prudent of me to make a snap judgment based on the information you provided. It is not our intent that people who are living together, when one of them gets injured and requires care, it is not our intent that that home would be required to be licensed. It would be similar to if I'm renting a room to a college student, and one day, you know, they take a spill on their moped and they've got road rash, you know, over a large portion of their body, or perhaps they break a leg, and now they're receiving care from someone outside. Well, this is really a renter. I didn't bring the person in a renting environment who needed care at that time, and I was knowledgeable about that. So certainly that would be a situation where that home would not be required to be licensed. And it sounds like that could be the similar situation in your situation. But without more details, you know, I wouldn't be able to say one way definitively yes or no.
Would you recommend that caller, say, get in touch with your office or some other office to find out more or to tell them more information they can work with?
They could. I mean, I'd be leaning to, you know, that home, as he described it, would not be required to be licensed. Again, that's not our intent. You know, there could be those who, in among the aging-in-place homes, for example, where the landlord is predominantly or perhaps exclusively renting to people who need care, whether they're providing the care or not, those situations we would certainly expect to be licensed.
There's another caller on the line from the Caregivers Foundation. Carrie, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, Carrie, tell me what you're thinking about.
Well, I'm enjoying this conversation. We work with families throughout the state that have loved ones in everything from foster homes to skilled nursing facilities. And the care that's given varies, unfortunately, too widely. It's often tied to the amount of money that people have to spend on care. But what we see too frequently is a response by caregivers to intense scrutiny and criticism that sometimes results in backlash to the actual resident.
Retaliation.
Retaliation. And with our clients, we do unexpected visits all the time, so it does help. And we find that it does seem to help the entire facility because we show up all the time.
In the case like...
The more involvement family has or is able to have, the better care the person that they love will receive.
Well, Carrie, in a situation that you just described where you find out-and-out malfeasance, what recourse do you have? What do you do? To whom can you report?
We report. We try to get corrective action done with the person that's actually, you know, in the home, because we do a lot of in-service training for caregivers and for facilities, trying to get them to see their clients as actual people and not just a body in a bed.
Carrie, thanks very much for checking in with us. There's another call on a very similar subject, a Kailua resident. Can you hear me?
Yes, hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi, I'm calling because about 2 months ago, I actually attempted to report an unlicensed, or what I suspect to be, an unlicensed elder care home in my immediate community to the Department of Health. And what I learned through that process is that the only reporting method that they currently accept is to send mail via snail mail to their, you know, regular USPS mail to their Kapolei address. Your guest mentioned that they're working on an option for online reporting. I mean, it's 2018. When's that going to happen? Thank you.
Thanks for calling. So there is an online option under development, right?
Under development. These things cost money, and IT can cost a good amount of money. And so that's been part of our challenge more recently. And so we've received some monies. We are taking monies that may have otherwise gone unspent, especially now that as we're approaching the end of the state fiscal year. Mm-hmm. And we're able to use some of those unspent monies to help us with our project.
Any kind of timeline on that, when that would be available?
Well, we've been working on what's called a statement of work that would specify the kinds of things that we want within our automated processes. And there are a number of phases. And so this is something that we have started. We are probably within the next few weeks issuing a request for quotes so that we can look at what different vendors have and what they could provide us in providing this resource to us.
There's a nurse case manager named Miley on the line. Miley, can you hear me?
Hi, yes, I'm on the line.
Yeah, hi, Miley.
Hi, this is Miley Harada, Miley Case Management. How can I guess you guys are discussing the HB 1911.
Mm-hmm.
I have conflicting opinions, probably even within myself, over this bill. I mean, because we want to keep the public safe, of course. I mean, I've met Mr. Ridley, and I know that we're all wanting to keep elderly people safe. But I also feel that the HB 1911 has some language in it that could be potentially a civil rights violation. And I certainly do not want to see the day when the Department of Health is just able to walk through a door at a person's home, because I think that violates civil rights, think it potentially opens up the door for injuries. I mean, I know residents have the right to have guns, so if somebody just walks in the door, I'm almost worried somebody's going to get shot. I think that will definitely, there will have to be a warrant in place for someone to enter a private property. So that's the first thing I want to say. The second thing I want to say in regards to the component of the bill that states that licensed facilities, licensed people cannot discharge to a non-licensed home, et cetera, et cetera.
Marley, I need to interrupt you. I'm very sorry. We've got less than a minute left, but thank you for checking in with us. And our in-studio guest is Keith Ridley, head of the Department of Health's Office of Healthcare Assurance. And Keith, you're going to a hearing at the Capitol on this measure, the measure she just referred to, a little bit later this afternoon.
That's correct. They're currently in conference committee, so the differences between the House version and the Senate version are what is that issue, and they're working that out. We're very optimistic that this will pass, and sometimes the nuance of language just needs to be gotten right before they pass it.
That's kind of what that last caller referred to, yeah?
Yes.
We've been talking about long-term care in Hawaii, care for the elderly, and as the legislature will be reviewing and voting on a bill later this afternoon, about 3 o'clock this afternoon at the state
right.
capitol.
Conference committee.
Conference committee.
Yeah. Once they agree on that, then it becomes a bill, and it goes to the various chambers for them to vote on. If it passes, it goes to the governor's office.
Thank you very much. We'd like to thank our guest, Keith Ridley, who heads the Department of Health's Office of Healthcare Assurance.
And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. If your call didn't make it on the air, you can still contact the TalkBack line. That number is 808-792-8217.
You also can send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Chris Vandercook.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.